Do you have an idea for a business, but you don't know what the next step to take? Or do you already have a business and you're ready to level up?
Is it really all about the hustle, or can you have some work-life balance?
On season 2 of Business Fluent,
we talk with entrepreneurs in all stages of their journey
so you can get tips and strategies to avoid the common mistakes and leverage best practices
so you can not only grow a thriving business, but you can live your best life. Welcome to season 2 of Business Fluent. I am Lisa Hudson, and I'm here with my co-host, Tony Gallo, and we're really happy to have our guest, Greg Carlin, on today. He is the owner of Play CLE, and he's going to tell us his whole entire life story around entrepreneurship. So let's start at birth. No.
Perfect.
I don't think we have that much time, Lisa.
Oh. Boy, there's an age joke right in there, right out of the gate. Well done, Tony.
No, seriously, you are one of the entrepreneurs I really admire because you've had lots of different trajectories around entrepreneurship. So when you were growing up as a kid, did you think that you would end up as an entrepreneur? Were you one of those kids that was mowing lawns and paper routes? And
I was. I don't think I knew what it was at that time, though. Like, it didn't really register to me that doing that was a career choice necessarily. It was more that I think I had parents and I had, you know, good mentors, particularly sport coaches, that just taught discipline and accountability. And that translated into wanting to, you know, earn my own money. It wanted to just be creative in, you know, ways that I could. It wasn't like a grand plan to go out and be an entrepreneur. I probably still have trouble spelling it today. I certainly couldn't spell it when I was younger. So let alone understand the meaning behind it.
Spell check helps with that now.
Spell check helps tremendously.
Did you consider yourself a good employee when you were working for somebody else? Sometimes the best entrepreneurs are bad employees. That's why they become an entrepreneur, right?
You know, look, I'd like to think I was a good employee at places that I've worked in the past. But I also recognize that I think the bad employee side of me was that I always had the desire to sort of be my own boss. I liked the sense of independence and creativity. I liked the pressure of decision making. I liked being counted on as part of a team with people. And I think all those things sort of led me towards that sense of being an entrepreneur. I'd like to think, again, that I was a really good employee at places because I soaked it all up. I mean, one of the things I give a ton of credit for is, and I think this is part of, like, you know, anybody's journey, right? As much as I'm going to probably overuse that word and, you know, everybody does, but you know, I think I've soaked up really well all of the lessons, good and bad, that I've learned over the years and tried to apply those, even the bad ones. Sometimes those are the best lessons you learn.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about entrepreneurial mindset. And even if you ultimately aren't going to become a business owner, having that mindset of ownership, of being able to make those decisions and be accountable are all great skill sets to have, whether ultimately you're a business owner or you are an employee. So we try to instill that mindset in a lot of the training that we do, especially with school-age children, that it's about that mindset, not necessarily what you do to earn money.
Yeah, it's a great comment, Lisa. It's one that I think I've struggled with over the last couple of years. You know, I've probably heard it and read it 1,000 times, like you guys have, in terms of the people who will say, "Well, act like an owner." And I don't know if that's really the fair way to sort of describe some of it. I think to me, the way I've sort of looked at it is, I don't necessarily want an employee to act like an owner. Because, you know, that may be beyond them. I want them to act like it matters to them. And I think that's, to me, the little switch that happens in there is, I want the decisions they make. I want the independent that they may be or dependent upon, you know, us as a group. I want them to act like they care, like it directly affects them. They don't have to act like me. I think it's just important that they embrace that, you know, every action they take is a reflection of who they are. And it's going to be a part of them for the rest of their life, that it carries with them. Again, good and bad, just like it has my own experience.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think that's what makes a great manager, boss, owner, is someone who does empower that kind of, you know, the decision you make may not be the exact decision I would make, but if you did it with the best intention and the best intention for the customer and for the business, you know, we're never going to beat you up about it. You know, that you have that power. And I think that keeps happy employees and ultimately is the best thing for the customer and the business. So,
well, yeah. And I think entrepreneurs have to make those tough decisions regardless, because, you know, whether you have to lay somebody off in order to keep the doors open or keep, you know what I mean? There, especially during COVID, I'm sure there was a ton of hard decisions that you had to make with your multiple businesses. So, you know, it's a tough road to hoe. And I mean, I worked my first job out of college was with a small family owned business, and I saw him struggle making payroll. Sometimes I saw him not pay himself in order to pay his employees, and you know, he thought of his employees as like he felt responsible for all those families, whether it was 18 families or 26 families or whatever, you know, whatever number it was. And you know, I think that, and as an entrepreneur, you know, that kind of lands on you. And you know, so I think some people may not be able to handle that mentally really well, but you know, how have you come to kind of embrace that?
Well, I think it's a great point that you make, Tony, in that, you know, I felt fortunate that when I was in high school, one of the jobs I had, I was working at a pizza place, and it was a husband and wife that bought one of the franchise locations. This was down in Strongsville. Mm-hmm. And there was something about just the way that they included not just me, but many of us that ended up working there, where, you know, you felt like you were a part of it with them. You weren't just an employee. I don't know if you go as, you know, we're the family of it, but they made an inclusive environment for the employees around them. And even when they were then going and opening another location in Brecksville, I got to be a part of that. I got to assist and help. And just the way in which they treated people and the way in which they sort of showed the good and the bad through their eyes. Yeah, they didn't tell us to act like they would. But they did sort of talk openly or have a level of transparency that has certainly stuck with me. And it's carried me through, you know, years of working with employees where I don't mind talking to anybody about where we're really at. You know, the good that's happening with the company, the bad that then the challenges that we take. And I don't make them have the decision because, as you said, ultimately the decision lies with me.
Right. Yeah.
But having that level of open communication and transparency is really beneficial to people.
I agree. But, you know, let's back step a minute, Greg. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Play CLE and the business that you have, and maybe talk about that story a little bit.
Yeah. I'll try to keep it as relatively short as we can. So Play CLE, we're a little under 2 months away from our 4-year anniversary.
Wow.
Which, as we were talking offline before we got started here, at least the last 18 plus months have actually felt like at least 5 to 10 years alone. So I'm not sure what the math actually lies with it, but we're nearing our 4-year anniversary. Play CLE is a indoor adventure park. It was one of the first of its kind, really, in the country, where we were taking multiple activities, some that were starting to gain some popularity on indoor spaces, others that were traditionally outdoor, like zip lines and rope courses. And we combined it together. And we were really trying to hit on this notion of active entertainment, where instead of a sedentary and like environment for entertainment and or, you know, bar and dining, you're putting activity in its place. At the time, a lot of the best examples of that were trampoline parks, and they served as a really good inspiration of what we wanted to evolve, the idea of that into something better, something that was more all ages, something that had more activity opportunities to it, and really embrace the social and group aspect of that type of environment with the food, with, you know, drinking, with event space that really catered to a lot of different audiences. So we opened up in late 2017. I think from day two, felt like we had an instant connection with the audience and the guests that we were looking to sort of reach out to. And through all the ups and downs from that, knew that we had an opportunity to expand and continue to build on what we were hoping to be a really interesting brand in that sort of entertainment and recreation space. I had plans of grandeur way back in 2018, 2019, that at this point in time, we'd have a couple of locations. We might even be potentially franchising that out. But the reality of the life as a small business hit, and no more so than, you know, what COVID and the last 18 plus months have been. We were fortunate enough to open our second location November of 2020. Mm-hmm. We started construction actually in late 2019 of that, and that was down in Columbus. We finally got that opened in November of 2020. So maybe categorically one of the worst possible times in which to open a second location, but we're nearing on that 1 year mark, which is huge. The enthusiasm for the brand, even from potential people who would, you know, be interested in franchising it, has never died down. We've just completely slowed the process of it, because one of the things that has been really important for us is to get our house in order. And that has been the biggest challenge we have faced, not only in just these 4 years, but it's been the biggest challenge I've had in my entire career. What we've had to go through for COVID, like a lot of others, you know, we're not vastly different, but like a lot of others, has been nothing short of extraordinary.
Yeah, your industry, really, any of that kind of entertainment thing took a really hard hit due to COVID. But when you look back, like in those 2017, and we were talking and doing your feasibility plan and what you thought it was going to be, do you feel like that is what it is?
Yes, I do. I think we... This is one of those things I hate actually giving myself any credit at times, you know, so you use that generic we at times. I always wanted an environment where the activities could change and evolve, but there was a vibe or a feeling that we were getting across the guests, you know, one that there's you can be active, you can have fun. We can sort of cater to a variety of demands in terms of an individual guest walking in and the experience they're seeking out, up to and including massive large groups that we can kind of build, you know, this fun, interesting experience for. And we've been able to do that. And I think to some degree, you know, the pandemic has helped sort of shape some of that, even on firmer ground than it had been when we first started, because we've had to sort of really examine who we are and where we fit in the mindset or zeitgeist of a guest. And so it has been very reaffirming that, you know, we can create an experience for people. And a lot of people will talk about that. And, you know, we have very unique ways in which we sort of dissect that internally. And I think there's something to that. The activities are a byproduct of ultimately what somebody's getting. It's the experience they get to have amongst themselves and others that's really important for us.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Greg, and you should take the credit, because I think from those initial conversations to when I go in there, it's the vision that you created for me when we talked about it. So you should take the credit for that. So
what was Greg, was doing Columbus easier Or was it like starting from scratch because you were in a different community? Or, I mean, I've driven by it. I was on my way to visit my niece in Dayton, and it's right there. It's like, wow, it's right there. You got a great location.
It's a beautiful location. And to answer your question, it was harder, and it wasn't harder because of the pandemic. I think, to some degree, I created false expectations in thinking that, I knew all the things that we didn't do right in Cleveland. I had a pretty good idea of the changes we want to do to improve upon it. And we were really focused on those. I let up the gas, if you will, on all the other things that could have gone wrong. Not remembering that at the end of the day, you're never going to be good enough to predict exactly if it's going to rain today or not. You're not going to predict if it's going to snow in October or if there's going to be a terrible winter. You just know that something's going to happen. You have a pretty good idea when that may be or what it might look like. But the exact nature of the problems you have, much like the weather, it's a guess. And I sort of lost sight of a little bit early on of like, oh, we got this. You know, we've got the template and we're building on top of that. And the reality is it was all new problems. The good news is, you know, we really sought out in our second location there to improve it, to make it better. And it wasn't about being bigger, which that facility is. It was really about taking all the learnings that we have and all the failings of the first one and finding ways to sort of make it better. And it'll be fun to do that with the third and so on and so forth.
Avon, you retrofitted an existing building. Was Columbus built from the ground up?
No, same as Avon. So okay. retrofitted an old warehouse.
Okay.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see on a go forward basis. One of the challenges that's going to be faced for us, and it's happening out there in the world today, is this type of space with tall ceilings. That type of availability in industrial environments is becoming few and far between. It's probably has one of the lowest, to my knowledge, of vacancy rates in the entire country. And I think it's going to be a really interesting space for us going forward on whether we choose additional locations based upon the availability and where we might land geographically there, or if we start to build from the ground up.
Is that like 40-foot ceilings? How high is that go?
Close to, yeah. So okay. In Cleveland, we're at 35. And then the Columbus location is actually split a little differently. And so we have 36 in our high bay area and then 22 in another space.
Got it.
I know that was one of the conversations we had, how people think like maybe abandoned shopping malls and stuff would be a great space. But the problem is, yeah, it's big enough, but the ceilings aren't high enough. And to raise the roof. Literally, it can be cost prohibitive. And so, I remember having that conversation, and it's too bad because you think about all the, where maybe on the industrial side, there's not availability, but on the retail side, there's tons of availability. So,
yeah, you know, we've had, it's a great comment, Lisa. We've had a few different, property owners, you know, some of some national based, you know, mall groups, that we've talked with even as recent as a few months ago. And to your point, they are nearing desperation and looking at taking some of the old, you know, anchor stores and finding ways to reuse them. And I think one of the advantages is that they're willing to commit capital to that type of redevelopment because you're talking pretty significant sums of money. We've had a number of people. One of my favorite things is, you know, if I happen to be here on a Friday or Saturday or so, and the casual person who, you know, will come up to me and say, you know, are you work here or are you a manager or something? I'll say, yeah. And they said, okay, well, yeah, this person over here said you're the owner and, you know, how much did this cost to build? Mm. And it's fascinating to hear people's perspective on that because whatever it is, keep adding zeros.
Yeah. It never ends, I'm sure.
Never ends.
Imagine how fast we could solve the world's biggest problems if more SaaS startups would gain traction sooner. Welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. This podcast is dedicated to sharing experiences from B2B SaaS CEOs who are going above and beyond to deliver change that is noticed. You will hear their secrets and learn what is required to build a SaaS business that the world starts talking about and keeps talking about, and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so.
I think how everyone wants to talk about the bad side effects from COVID, and there are a lot. One of the good things is that I do think it has forced people to look at things a little differently. I mean, when we talk to clients, and it's shocking pre-COVID, how many weren't even had any kind of digital platform or e-commerce capability. It's like, okay, people, it's the 21st century, COVID or not, you need to have some e-commerce capabilities. And so it's kind of forcing them to look at those options, whether they wanted to or not. And that's just one example. But I think it allowed people to see some of those niches and some of those opportunities that they might not have looked at had it not been for COVID.
I think we're all forced with that, right? At one point or another. I mean, whether it's for business, whether it's even your personal life, you it's typically through crises that, you know, the best version of yourself or even a new version of it sort of emerges. And so, there's a lot of bad to talk about with COVID in many, many different directions of it. But yeah, it has forced you to sort of look at yourself and your business and, you know, the people you work with very differently. I've been reflecting on it in Cleveland in that just this past Friday, October 8th, was 1 year since we had reopened. Mm-hmm. We had actually tried to reopen a little bit before that in the middle of the summer, and the timing wasn't right when the mask mandate came in play and everything. So we were, in effect, closed essentially through, you know, March until beginning of October. And sort of looking back 1 year on this now, it's been, you know, there's a lot of gratitude that I've had for watching, you know, our team step up and having to sort of put themselves in the face of real crises moments and be able to watch some of them step up and rise to the challenge and see sort of their own personal development. It's extremely gratifying. So there is good to come out of it. You just have to look for it sometimes.
I know one of the first meetings I think Lisa and I were probably at, or I just remember having this conversation or hearing this conversation, was that when major crises like this happen, it makes a whole lot of new entrepreneurs, because these people who either were working at this particular, you know, industry or for this particular job, it gave them the impetus to say, you know what, I'm not going to go back to that. I'm going to finally follow my dream and do XYZ, whatever that dream is. And that we had anticipated a whole bunch of entrepreneurs coming out. And to be honest with you, I think Lisa and I have been impressed with the amount of people that are going through the SBDC. I'm impressed with the people who are joining the chamber as a new business that, you know, have said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, throw caution to the wind. And I don't know if the Paycheck Protection, you know, program helped, if some of the dollars that the government kind of handed out to keep people afloat gave them the opportunity to go back to school, get that degree, get, you know, do whatever it is that they needed in order to kind of throw caution to the wind and open up the business. And I'm hoping the best is still yet to come, because we're still not out of this completely. And I think there's still a whole lot of people out there that are working on their plans for, you know, the new, whatever that new is. But I love the way you said, you know, working on making something better before your competitors do, and before your customers get bored. You know what I mean? You have to come up with something else. So,
yeah, I think that's one of the things that probably all of us and everybody else who talks about entrepreneurials, you know, that environment or small business ownership, I think the thing we probably all love about it is that they're sort of like snowflakes, right? No two are exactly the same. There's not a playbook. There are things that we can all talk about. There are things we can teach and coach. But there's not the exact playbook that's going to be the same for any of us. And you know, Tony, to the comment that you're making, you know, I think everybody who sort of gets down that path, they have to find what firm or solid ground looks like to them before they get into that spot, because you have to feel like you've sort of fortified your base and then you make that jump. Mm-hmm. You know, and my version of it might be different than yours, and definitely is going to, and it's going to be different than Lisa's. And you know, that all looks differently. Probably a lot of people, if even, you know, just listening to myself talk about it right now, a lot of people probably think that's just all about money. Typically that's the furthest thing from it. It's really about making sure that you have the personal and professional foundation to just feel comfortable with the uncertainty that's going to come. Like that to me is the fun part. And yeah, Lisa, I'm going to stop so you can ask.
No, I was just going to say, but please, entrepreneurs don't like to talk about the money. So the money's really important. The financials are really important.
The financials are extremely important, right? And I still wonder why we're in 2021 and that's a mystery to anybody. Right. You know,
Greg, all the business owners I talk to, it's the exception that the business owner or entrepreneur wants to have those discussions. Like they all want, like when they come to see me, they all want this beautiful narrative of their business plan and to tell the story. And that part's great. And then I bring out the Excel spreadsheet with the financial projections and it's like, holy crap. Like, yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, but you don't even know if this beautiful story is going to make any money, you know, or like they don't know their cost of goods. Like, so how do you know how to price your product if you don't know that? And it is a constant battle. And I always am the bad guy because that's kind of my area that I work with a lot of clients. And so I have to say, I'm probably not the favorite advisor on the SBDC team.
But I mean, it's tried and true. I mean, you don't want to call it the most important thing because I think categorically it's 1A, B, C, D, you know, there's a lot of very important or most important things. Understanding your financials, even when you know you're going to be 100% wrong in something, just having the sense to be able to walk into it and having shown the discipline to like think constructively about, you know, the performance of this business and what that means. It's the greatest exercise that anybody can go through. You know, my chief operating officer here at Play, Brian, as he and I have looked at anything, whether we've looked at other businesses, whether we've talked about opening new plays, whether we're talking about making a capital investment just for existing business and something new, the financials and building a model is one of the very first things we do. And I don't think we've ever gotten to it without doing 10, 12 versions of it because we beat it up constantly.
No, and that is awesome to hear because, like I said, most people don't want to talk about it. And I always say, you don't have to be a CPA, but you have to know how to look at your financials to guide your decisions. Like they should be looked at and you make decisions based on where those financials are. And even if you do something crazy that maybe goes against what your financials tell you, at least you know you're doing something crazy, right? And you're taking a crazy chance. So so I'll pay you later for plugging the financials, Greg.
Well, and here, let me go one step further so I can double down on that payment. I also think, you know, people don't take advantage of resources that can be free to them. And there are so many places where conversations are free. And Lisa, that's how you and I met years ago, is because we were able to get connected. And I had enough humility, I hope, to be able to come in front of you and be like, hey, I got this, you know, crazy whacked out idea. I did have some financials and like, let's beat this up. Look, I get people's hesitation on it. You know, it's showing a side of yourself, even if you're not very confident in it. But you're not there to judge. You're there to actually help and improve and coach. And I think people need to be able to put that in the proper perspective. You can't get better at something unless you have a coach. And coaches come in all shapes and sizes and forms. And there's a lot of really good free resources to be a small business owner where that coaching is available to people. And they got to have the humility to just take that step to reach out.
Yeah, thanks. And there are over 900 SBDCs across the country. So that's small business development centers. There's women business centers. There's SCORES. So I think a lot of times people think that they're going to have to pay big money for a business coach or advisor, but start with your free resources and we'll get you to the point and we'll let you know when it's time to pay for more expertise. So thanks for mentioning the SBDC. Hey. Right? So to shift gears a little bit, you know, it's amazing. Like if you're on any of the social media sites and you go to any of the entrepreneur sites, they're all about the hustle, the grind, and that whole hustle culture. And I get it because, you know, being an entrepreneur isn't for the lazy, right? So, but I also think we've just become that just work. And how do you find work-life balance?
The sound bite is no, what balance? I think the reality is, yes, it can be really difficult. It is challenging as a business owner to shut it off. And you have to be as intentional about that as you are anything else. I don't think you can necessarily shut it off all the time. I think the balance is important. For a couple of years, one of the things that was probably one of my greatest releases was that I was continuing to coach soccer. And so outside of work, it was something that forced me to sort of put the phone away, walk away from the office at times. And I'll talk about this endlessly, but I've learned more lessons about my business and about working with my colleagues and managing people. I've learned more about it on a soccer field being a coach than I probably have just about anywhere else, because the lessons are very transferable. And so here I was soaking something in that was a good release for me, but also has direct applicability in the way in which I work with, you know, people around me. And so it was really good. I think the other, you know, part of sort of this work-life balance is you've got to find a way in the mounds of crap sometimes that you have to deal with. You got to find the ways to still have fun at it. Maybe I'm lucky because I work in an environment that we're intended to have fun constantly. But you know, one of the things as a leader is that I can measure and read the room pretty well of how my people are feeling. And when they look like they're stressed and they may be having something personal that they're bringing into the office, part of my job is to be able to show them what that work-life balance is. We were just talking about one of the next outings that we're going to have, because it's really important for me to be able to get everybody to do it, not just me, you know, and I don't know what the right answer is with it. I just know it's something that ultimately you got to be really intentional about.
If you were talking to someone and they said, "I'm starting a business, Greg," what advice? Is there a tip or trick that you would tell them, make sure you do X or?
Oh, if we're wrapping up, we don't have nearly the amount of time, of course, of it. You know, if I'm choosing one today, because I think there's many tips to go through, but, you know, one that's very important to me is, I think you do have to go out there and talk your idea around a lot. It almost goes back to that notion we were saying earlier that, you know, your idea isn't necessarily new, you know, and you can't treat it as sort of a state secret necessarily. There's a certain amount of protection depending on, you know, particular situations. But in reality, the more you go out there and verbalize it and contextualize it, and talk on different aspects of the business with friends, with your family, with, you know, free resources that are out there, with people you reach out to on LinkedIn just because you want to buy them a beer or a cup of coffee and want to bend their ear, the more you do it, the more perspective you're going to gain. What I like about the notion of that, it really reinforces the notion of sort of active or attentive listening. It's really hard when you commit yourself to sort of being an entrepreneur that there's a certain resolve you have to build where it's like, okay, I'm committed to my idea. I'm committed to the purpose. I'm going to go down this path. And I'm not going to necessarily let bumps in the road deviate me or people who are naysayers pull me off of that. And at the same time, you have to be open to other viewpoints and perspectives. And you can do both of those things, but you have to seek it out. And you have to be sort of open to taking, you know, what could be, what you hope is constructive criticism. It's hard to do, you know.
I'm sure.
Especially when it's your baby, right? So,
yeah,
you know, and we encourage people to do that market research, to talk to someone other than your mom, right? Because I know if they're like, my mom, no matter what I said, it's the greatest idea in the world, right? So,
of course.
So yeah, no, I think that's great advice. And because ultimately, if you don't have someone who's willing to pay for your product or service at the end, it doesn't matter how good of an idea it is.
That's right. You know, and look, those of us who are on the other side of it, right, that might be the ones who have started something, some successfully, some not so successfully, right? We all have sort of our stories and such with it. 99% of us are willing to take the time to sit down with people and have that conversation. I was in front of a group of students from Ohio University a few weeks ago, and I told every one of them, here's my cell number. Like, if you have something you want to talk about, you want to just talk about your college career and what you're going to do, or you want to talk about an idea, like, here you are. Like, I love making the time because, quite frankly, some of the ideas that I get are based upon those conversations. I probably get as much from, you know, meeting new people and just listening to their story as much as I do if I'm seeking it out myself.
Yeah, that's true. That's great.
That's awesome. Well, thank you, Greg, so much for your time. And anybody who's in Cleveland or Columbus or passing through and wants a really fun adventure, please go to Play CLE or Play CBUS.
CBUS.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's definitely worth the time and money to go and visit and have some fun.
Thanks, Greg. I think it was great talking to you. Great seeing you again. We look forward to having a chamber event out there sometime soon.
Looking forward to it. And yeah, Tony and Lisa, thank you so much.
Mad Magazine.
Advertising mascots.
B-movie posters.
And cartoons.
Oh yeah, can't forget cartoons.
If you get the funky connection that ties these pop culture gems together, you'll dig two designers walk into a bar.
See, we're a couple of creatively curious pals living between the bookends of grand museums and dive bars.
Hey, you know the place, the sweet spot where highbrow and lowbrow become drinking buddies.
So join our barroom chats as we talk influential work and uncover stories of how the familiar became iconic. Think behind the music for the stuff we love.
Check out our website at twodesignerswalkintoabar.com.
And listen wherever you get your podcasts or visit evergreenpodcasts.com.